going to pick up my toaster oven, Sean. I'm going to dive into the water with the toaster oven.
I'm excited for this.
Ready?
Make sure the oven's plugged in.
Hold on. All right, I got it. Hang on. All right, plugging it in. Dive in there! Hello? Am
Welcome
I in heaven?
Welcome to the afterlife.
Oh, my God. Tom, it's you. Did I light up a room?
You lit up a room, but where you're going, it won't be needing any lighting.
Is Jacob here, too?
He's far too young to be here.
But I hear his laughter. That's all I need. In Washington right. State, taking too many children from their parents? A movement seeks to overhaul the foster care system. This is a complicated story because
yes.
Often some of the reasons that the kids are taken, if you start from the point of birth, a mother that is addicted to opioids, then passing on the opioid addiction to the child, and the child is then going to withdraw from the symptoms, and if it's not done properly, it can have detrimental effects to the overall health of the child for the rest of the child's life. If the child survives the withdrawal and the mother herself has a addiction and now she can't possibly take care of the kid, so it becomes extremely complicated. And the number of mothers that are giving birth in the state of Washington that are addicted to drugs, according to King 5, I saw this other side story, Tom, is apparently soaring. So that's the word that they use, but the statistics certainly bear that out. The question is that if you take too many kids away from their parents and then you create a foster care system, you know, how do we ever get a chance to reunite and keep families together?
Yeah, this is one of those stories where you don't want to go. The pendulum shouldn't swing too far to make it too easy for abusive parents to continue to abuse their parents. But you don't want it to go so far that parents whose greatest crime may be poverty and or drug addiction, you don't want to deprive them of getting their life back together. And so there's this constant pendulum swing. Even this article is all about the effort at trying to keep kids with the parents, because they think the pendulum might have swung too far. But they do acknowledge right off the bat that 1,840 kids died because of neglect and or abuse in this country in this past year or the year before. And so there is a real danger. There are extreme situations where kids should under no circumstance stay with these particular parents. We're not talking about that extreme end. We're talking about, and they profile, Seattle Times profiles a number of these individual parents. And by the way, the reason they're doing this story is there are a couple of pieces of legislation designed right now to kind of combat that. There's also an organization that's doing great work that kind of is the culmination of this article we'll get to, at the end. But one of the things they profile these women, and they say, yeah, that a lot of these cases, the woman never gets to go home with the baby girl or boy she just gave birth to because she's an addict. And until she gets clean, that isn't going to help. That's one of the things this organization of Snohomish County lawyers have put together, an organization. Let's see if I've got the title of it handy. Family Intervention Response to Stop Trauma Clinic. It's kind of an emergency response system for parents at risk of losing their kids. They will contact these pregnant moms who are in danger of losing their child once they give birth to them and work with them. And they cited this great case where this woman said, yeah, when I gave birth earlier and they took my child away, they just said, you need to get yourself clean. They didn't give her any brochures. They didn't give her any instructions. Yeah, they didn't really help her out. This is an organization of Snohomish County lawyers that actually work with the mom. They figure out a way to take care of if she has other kids or take care of these, the newborn. newborn while she's going through treatment, then they can be reunited. They're never, you know, disunited. And I think that's a wonderful thing. Another argument they say legislatively can be addressed. Maybe it's a little too easy to take kids away from homes. If it's not intent, if it's not drug addiction, it just happens to be poverty. One of the conditions is you have to have a respectable home. Well, if you don't have a lot of money and you have, you may have a loving, you know, mother who doesn't have the funds to actually have a nice home, they might say, well, you know, there are rats in the corner and all this. It's like maybe there's a better way instead of trying to help the kids who have a tough case parents, maybe they should try to help the parents stay with the kids by helping the parents out in the course of them taking care of the kids. It's a really rich and complex issue.
The state always, I mean, not overreacts, but is extremely sensitive to the child's well-being, right? So they're removing the child from a situation that's not safe for the kids. I always find it strange that they're also ultimately trying to get the kids back together again with the parents. Mm. And sometimes the parents just, they can't handle it. And then they spring out into the foster care system. I'm on the board of directors for Parent Trust for Washington Children. I've been on that board for 12 years or something. And we have programs. So when we know if the parent is on Medicaid or is receiving some type of support from the government, when that person gives birth, we are the ones that can come in and help to break cycles of abuse and other problems like that and have parent teach, have parent classes and father classes. We're, Parent Trust for Washington Children started a big program a number of years ago, Shaking Baby Syndrome, that if you, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're just at wit's end, and this can happen to anybody, rich, poor, doesn't matter. Sure. You're sleep deprived. The kid is colicky, cry. You grab the kid, just shut up, right? And you shake that kid, and then the damage is done. So they set up a program that you, 24 hours a day, you can call and the volunteer will come and at any time and sit with the baby while you go have a cup of tea or go for a walk or whatever to get your wits back about you again. But there are lots of programs that sort of step in now that see the problem and stop the mother who's got the addiction and the child who's now also addicted. You do want to unite them again because that's probably the best place for them. But I mean, there's some just terrible situations where people are having babies and they can't take care of themselves or take care of the kid. And then the state steps in. So,
but, by the way,
how just you solve all those problems. That's why it's so complicated. You said it's so rich and so complicated because now you're bringing an innocent soul into a situation that there's really not a good place for that kid.
Not ideal. And just because of my movie background, I would recommend if anyone's interested in this, there's this great film came out a couple of years ago called The Florida Project. And it was about that very kind of thing. There are people sort of living on the fringe, moms with kids living in motels. I mean, they weren't drug addicts, but they just didn't have much money. They were living just outside, like Disney World. And, they have, the DHS people coming by and they want to take this child. This mother clearly loves the child and does all these fantastic things, imaginative things, given the fact that they have no money for these children. And yet from the eyes of the state, well, you know, but listen, this isn't, what you're feeding them isn't that great and all this. And it's like a classic case of from the outside, the government or society says, you don't love this kid enough. This kid is not in a great situation. Whereas you see the movie, that kid has a great mom who is down on her luck. And that's the key.
Yeah. Yeah. It's heartbreaking, right? Because we have to go into assume that there is that unique bond between a mother and a child and there's love. And in some cases, it's not there and the state comes in to protect the most vulnerable.
Yes.
Joe Biden out on the tour. This is, by the way, he sat down with a bunch of advisors 2 weeks ago. Axion has the story that historians sat and met with him and he said, well, how can I be remembered? And they're like, listen, you go big. I mean, bigger than FDR, go bigger than Johnson, bigger than LBJ. Spend just the most, go historic. And that's exactly what Joe is pitching. It's more, I think it's close to $3 trillion.
Here we go. Not a plan that tinkers around the edges.
Two and two.
No.
It's a once-in-a-generation investment in America. Unlike anything we've seen or done
since we built the interstate highway system and the space race decades ago. In fact, it's the largest American jobs investment since World War II. It will create millions of jobs, good-paying jobs. It will grow the economy, make us more competitive around the world, promote our national security interests, and put us in a position to win the global competition with China in the upcoming years. It's big, yes. It's bold, yes. And we can get it done.
All right, so this is the absolute opposite of supply-side economics. This is demand-side economics, that you're going to push on the other side as opposed to the supply side. Ronald Reagan, after beating inflation, cutting taxes in 1983, spurring on the economy, spent a hell of a lot of money on defense, but basically went the other way. And this is Joe Biden wanting to spend, was it $2 trillion? It's $3 trillion, whatever it is.
So, yeah. So, John, yeah. It's two different. So it's such a big program that he split it into two. I think he thinks he has a better chance of maybe getting it through Congress. So the first one's like $2 million, and the next one's, you know, whatever, like closer to $2 million. It's like between $3 and $4 trillion combined. And so what he's doing is,
that's the average budget. That's how much the federal government spends normally a year, $4 trillion in 1 year.
So, you know, this is not to target those who've made it, not to seek retribution. This is about opening opportunities for everybody else. And here's the truth. We all will do better when we all do well. It's time to build our economy from the bottom up and from the middle out, not the top down. That hadn't worked very well. For the economy overall, it hadn't worked. Because Wall Street didn't build this country. You, great middle class, built this country. And unions built the middle class. And it's time. And this time, when we rebuild the middle class, we're going to bring everybody along, regardless of your background, your color, your religion, no matter. Everybody gets to come along. So today, I'm proposing a plan for the nation that rewards work, not just rewards wealth.
Okay, so he's going to rebuild the economy, even though the economy was growing.
It's
going to open the bottom up. By the way, 1638 was the beginning of a thing called capital, because people then realized the only way to build wealth is to have capital. The only way you build wealth is to actually create some sort of investments. You take money, you put it in, you grow something, you build a machine, you get a machine, and then the machine produces something. So when you actually have capital, which is money to invest to grow, that's how things go. So where does the capital come from? In this regard, the government will now choose winners and losers, and the government will now create the jobs. I don't know where this works. I guess he's looking at China, assuming, well, look what China does. If we're going to compete with China, even though he said, come on, man, China's not going to, what are you talking about? Come on, man. He sees China as a threat, and he likes the way China runs the government and runs the economy.
Well, he does think this will help U.S. compete with China, but this is considered the infrastructure bill, and this is why he thinks, I'm much more skeptical, but he thinks, or at least is acting as if he thinks, that he can get Republicans on board on this big spending deal, because infrastructure, that needn't be a Democratic or Republican stance. I mean, fixing your roads and bridges, expanding broadband internet and all that part, I think he could get Republicans on board. In fact, through the entire 4 years of the Trump administration, that's what they kept saying, well, this is going to be infrastructure week, and he never got around to it. That's what he's pushing. And here, my hunch is, John, that he realized that he couldn't get through both packages, so he's doing this one mostly on infrastructure and broadband, and then the second plan is dealing with childcare, healthcare, and education, which might be seen as softer items that might be hard to get a Republican support for. And then the big question is, politically, is he going to see if he can work? Because right now he says this is not set in stone. I want to work with Republicans. If he can get 10 Republicans on board for the first half, then in the second half, which he might think is a harder, you know, sell job, could he then revert to the reconciliation issue and just use Democratic votes or not?
Here's
that's
a question.
Some of the political
why do
speculation.
It? Joe, why do it? You had 3.2 or 3.3 unemployment in 2019 before the lockdown. You had the middle class shrunk, and the reason it shrunk is because more people moved up. So it got smaller because more people moved up. You had people making more money. For the first time in more than 10 years, you had the people in the lowest quintile actually began to have their wages begin to increase because as the market tightened, you had to employers had to offer more money to pull people up and out. So you had an economy growing, but you had irrelevant because richest guy
it's the pie
is not baked. The richest guy is not taking more from the poor guy. The richest guy becomes richer because the poorer people or everyone else is paying for some service that the richer guy can offer. Jeff Bezos is so rich is because he can deliver a package to your house in 24 hours and people like that, so they pay for that. So Jeff Bezos becomes richer and we all become richer because of it.
Why
spend it? Why spend the money? You really believe you're going to grow the economy by the government taking more money? And the government is going to create a job?
Yes. Bridges and roads, if we fix the infrastructure in this country, that'll create jobs and it'll be better for the country. And this is one of the few times where we're on the up. We can maybe take advantage of that, like they did in the 60s.
Why not go around
like they did with FDR?
Yeah, because the bridges and roads are crumbling. Is that what they're going
to
say?
Well, they are. Even the Republicans agree to that. The Republican guy came out and said, yes, you know, actually, I'd love to do something with our infrastructure. The highway safety guy, whatever. He's the senator from North Dakota, I think.
$4 trillion? Look out, Joe, because if inflation kicks in, you are screwed. Or stagnation kicks in, you're done for, buddy. All right, Tracy Taylor, talk about the roads and the infrastructure. What's going on out there? Crumbling highways we've got right now. I didn't know what was going to happen there, Tom. I thought I'd have to jump in and just add something about Cairo 7. I could have mentioned brought to you by Makushu Casino. I could have just gone right into it. Biggest and best in Northwest right there between Makushu Casino and Rich. Hello, there's Rachel Bell. There she is. She is the Makushu Casino of the Makushu Casino.
Hi. Yeah, that's what they call me. That's my nickname.
You know what I'm going to try to do, Rachel? Mm-hmm. While you are talking and I am listening, I'm going to try to prepare my dinner. I'm going to be making dinner while doing a radio show.
I think you're already eating. I can hear you eating. Okay, that's a perfect
just a little
idea.
Something to kind of
I'll take it from here. I'll take it from here. You go cook. So not all industries suffered during the pandemic, of course. There were a lot of industries that actually did better than usual, like sports equipment, like bikes and snowshoes, home gym equipment. Of course, toilet paper was doing great last year. But the Wall Street Journal wrote about another industry that has exploded and they predict will continue to do well for years to come because of the pandemic. And that is the pet industry. They said more than 3 million new pets were either adopted or purchased during the pandemic. And Petco says they earned 2 million new customers because of it. So apparently pet ownership in the U.S. has become its own economic barometer. In the past, they've used RV sales to see how the economy was doing. Now they're using pets because they say a lot more people are moving to the suburbs to have more space. And part of that is to get pets. So Petco sees it as more space, bigger dog, more food purchased from Petco. They also said there were fewer births in 2020, 300,000 fewer births than in 2019. People who didn't want to have a child during the pandemic who might have gotten a pet instead. And then they're spending all their money on their pet instead of the baby.
Yeah, that would have all been news, except we just did that story.
Somebody go.
Well, what happened, Rachel, was we needed a stall. Hold on, explain what happened. Hold on, we don't want to steal your thunder, even though we did. The governor was late to the microphone.
I can do another story.
So then I said, hey, do you think Rachel, do you think she's got another story in her? And Tom said, are you kidding me? Rachel Bell, she's got more stories than you shake a stick at.
We've got you down for masking stories and concert roadie stories.
That's what we got you down for.
Oh, okay. Maybe this was my fault. Sorry, guys. Let's talk about roadies. I'm so sorry. I wrote in that story. Wow, let's just do this all on the air. Okay.
Wait, can you make it sound more dramatic?
Yeah.
Yes. Are we don't have enough roadies?
I messed up.
Go ahead.
We don't have enough roadies? Okay, so concerts are going to be coming back just... Okay, so concerts are going to be coming back soon. And just today, a friend of mine told me that he bought a ticket to see a show at the Tacoma Dome in June, which I can't even imagine that place being filled with people in just a few months. But the problem is, according to the Wall Street Journal, that they predict a third of workers, and a lot of those are roadies, won't return to the live event industry because in the past year, none of them have worked and they weren't waiting around. They went out and got other jobs instead of just staying on unemployment for the whole year. So... some of the jobs that they have taken, Amazon warehouse jobs, delivering packages for UPS, carpenters and electricians have started working at Home Depot or started their own companies. And so they're worried that when concerts come back, they're not going to have enough roadies. It's a roadie crisis. And the reason is they said, hey, the other job was fun, but it wasn't stable because every time they went on tour, that was like a new hire. They were contract workers. So a lot of them have jobs now that have insurance and vacation, and they like the stability. And there's nothing more rock and roll than stability.
Yeah, what's funny is that this happens to a lot of people.
You guys, today is the worst ever.
No, you're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. You just keep right on going. You're Muckleshoot Casino. That's where you are.
Okay.
Okay. All right. There you go. All right.
Watch out if he starts calling you Lou.
What were you saying, Tom?
Who's Lou?
So I thought what was interesting about this discussion, these roadies, they realized they had to do something else with their life for, you know, a year or so. And a lot of them found out, hey, this other life is better. A lot of them started their own little private businesses, or they got, as they said, got something a little more stable, and they felt they were more, you know, could be more around their families and all. It's funny how the unexpected can make us realize things that we might not have otherwise realized if we didn't have this sort of downtime. And apparently roadies are the ones getting hit hardest. The other thing I thought I was most struck by in that article was the fact that there are no apprentices. That it's one thing where you have to replace, it's one, you could probably, because everyone loves show business, you could probably find replacements for the people that were roadies that left. But the problem is the way the people, the roadies get replaced are by people that come on, they're apprentices, they learn the job, and then they're ready to take over. We've had a year of no apprentices, and so now the people that left and aren't going to come back don't have the natural apprentice replacement programs.
Does that job appeal to you? To
anybody? Someone's going to have to teach them how to bring the guitar onto the stage.
That's the guitar tech. I'm talking about the guys that break it down. I think look up Jackson Browne. He has a song about, you know, before you come from my piano. It's the roadies that get them on and get them off, and you know they're driving through the night and all that other stuff. And that Jackson Browne song. Does that appeal to you? I would think one summer of that would be pretty cool. If you were 22 or 28 years old, or 30, or no, 50, 80, and you had a heroin problem or something like that, and you're just out on the road for one summer touring with a band. Does that appeal to anybody? Rachel? Tom? Jacob? Sean? Anyone?
Depends on the band.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what band it is. You get sick of the songs. I'm just saying.
I'd rather be
you know. Yeah.
Is there a delay?
I'd rather be a summer camp counselor.
Major delay, Tom.
Okay.
Major delay.
Yes, there is.
Okay. Rachel, do
hey
you
Hey, guys, let's try
apologize?
This again tomorrow.
Yes. With the way the delay is, I think it's... tomorrow's going to be here in about 5 minutes. All right.
That's all right.
Muggy's Buggy's Auto Service Centers. You got a 16 locations. That's what you got there. You got 50 years in the business. And you know, you take your car to Buggy's Auto Service Centers, you know what to know. You know what it's going to happen. It's going to be done right the first time. And they're going to fix it. And you're going to feel good about yourself. You're going to get in that car and you're going to drive away and you're coming back. And you come back at the Buggy's Auto Service Centers. With 16 locations, you can't go wrong. Thank you, Buggy's. Tom, I have my big surprise. I was so excited. I saw it this morning at 5:30. I thought, oh, I got to send this to Jacob. And then I'm going to surprise you on the air. And here's what the surprise would have sounded like. I'm sorry, hang on. For a second. I feel like I'm doing a Rachel Bell segment.
Yeah, Rachel.
Tom, you've always wanted this to happen, and now it will. The Super Bowl's on Sunday, and President's Day's on Monday. You always wanted to have a day off, and now you do, Tom. That's right. It's the Monday after the Super Bowl is a holiday.
Son of a gun.
But not this year. Next year, 2023, because Jacob pours a big bucket of cold water right on top of my big surprise. And he does the math and finds out it's 2023. You get the day after the Super Bowl as a holiday.
Well, that's a good thing because I think the Seahawks have a better chance 2 years from now after we've got rid of that fluke Russell Wilson quarterback and gotten a real quarterback in here to take us all the way to the Super Bowl.
But I thought you'd be excited by that because of the 17 games, because they've extended the season, because they're also starting later and all this other stuff, that it's going to go right into, it'll be that Sunday, and then in 2023, the next day will be President's Day. This year, Monday will be Valentine's Day. That's going to be, that's not going to affect anybody really. But, no, seriously, was the Super Bowl's like, oh no, now I've got to run over to 7-Eleven and get one of those chocolate roses. you'll be able to fit it into your, you'll be able to fit it into your schedule.
Well, whatever the case, yes, that's just your clever way of announcing to our listeners that they haven't caught up. Because we realize that not everybody is a sports fan who listens to us, that the 17-game schedule is now upon us in the NFL, and that this year the Seahawks get an extra game. Everybody in the NFC has to play a road game in the AFC. The following year, the year when apparently we're going to have a holiday right after the Super Bowl, the year, it will be when the NFC teams get to stay home and have to play, the AFC has to play their extra game on the road. But so we'll be playing Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh because we were number one in our division this past year, and Pittsburgh was number one in their division. So we will play Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh as our 17th game.
Are they making people fly to London again?
Yes. Oh, and that's the other announcement. Every team now, because I think some teams have gotten dumped there, like when it was the Oakland Raiders, now the Las Vegas Raiders. They've played like 16 years in a row, it feels like. But now every team has to play at least one international game every 8 years. So they're on a perfect rotation. That's not bad, though. Once every eight.
But this is another game. This is more damage to their body, more injuries. If you think, if you analyze last year at 2019, take the whole COVID lockdown stuff out of it, boy, you saw games turn because of ankles that weren't working and shoulders, big players out, bigger hits, faster bodies slamming into one another. Even though they changed some of the rules, that the concussions might have dropped just a little bit, but just overall. I mean, can you imagine how beat up these guys are going to be by the time they get towards the end of the season like that?
I'm so glad
I did not make the professional, the NFL. When I was 8 years old and I wanted to be an NFL, now that I look back on it, thank God my life turned out the way it did.
And same thing for Ryan, the NBA, though. You know, I mean, he almost could have been starvation wages over an endless season. Anyway, this scene is a big money grab, and the players are hoping that they'll see a bit of that money grab. They just signed a huge television contract the year after next, when the Super Bowl will be followed by the President's Day holiday.
That's what you're looking forward to. All right, Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us. I know you said there was sun glare. You haven't said that in a while.